pleasure of having Nick Wilkie with us, who is the CEO for StreamText.net, which is the leading platform for real-time text communication solutions. StreamText.net is used by a majority of the cart and caption providers in the country to provide real-time accessibility to their customers. And Nick will be giving you an explanation of the difference between cart and captioning, which is really very interesting. His technical skills combined with his experience working with cart and captioning gives him a really unique perspective on accessibility solutions. He is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin with a degree in computer sciences and now lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and we're delighted to have him with us for today's session. So I'm going to hand over the microphone to him, and Nick, please go ahead, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the introduction, and thank you all for coming. I'm really looking forward to talk about this and cover a topic I spend a lot of time going through. And I'm going to be trying to advance my slide here. Wait a second. Clicked the wrong button. But I'm really excited to be talking about it. And I'm going to give you an introduction about my background, where I've come from. I've really been involved in this industry pretty heavily for the last 5 to 6 years. And then I'm just going to give you a basic workflow of how things work and some of the terminology. I find that and I'm not going to give exact terms. The problem is as things evolve, these terms obviously have evolved as well. And I'm going to cover some of the speech-to-text technologies. I know that's not the delivery part of internet captioning, but I think it's important to touch on those. I find there's a lot of gray area in what people define as certain technologies and how they're used for captioning. And then I'm going to go right into some examples, some real examples of internet-based captioning, different applications and different uses. Obviously there's a lot we could cover on this topic that I won't be able to cover on this in a lot of detail, but I'm going to try and touch on the main points of this as well. One of the things to cover too is I'm going to be talking more about live events during this session than the post-production closed caption, which would be more for the replay on demand. That's really a whole nother session unto itself, and I can touch on that briefly as well if we have some time at the end, and I look forward to answering your questions. So I'm going to start off with just giving you a little background about StreamText and where I come from and what we've been doing. Well, StreamText was founded back in 2003, and a firm, Caption First, caption firm, actually was the original customer of ours back then that requested a platform that they could use and real basically to send their real-time captions over the internet to support individuals and groups. And so that was our introduction to the business back then. And we've had a number of iterations in the platform since 2003. And there's also been a big evolution in how the platforms are being used. So I joined StreamText about 7 years ago. And at that time, the amount of real-time captioning being done over the internet was very small. Most of the work at the time was being done by on-site providers, where a provider would show up on-site, whether it would be in a classroom, a business setting, wherever it may be. Typically that person had to be local, or they were using a modem to dial up and send their captions through. Well, there's been a big change, and one of the greatest things about the internet, it's freed up both sides of the equation. The caption provider can be located just about anywhere in the country, and the receiver who's receiving the card and caption can also be almost anywhere as long as they have an internet connection. And what's really exciting about this, and as I go through this, I'll hit on this some more, is really how it's opened up, I think, a lot of opportunities to get accessibility services that you could never get them before. And it allows you really to open up a lot of areas and a lot of opportunities, I think, that weren't necessarily open before the internet really has taken hold and has a quality level now where you can get internet service in quite a few places. And it really has opened up where you can deliver services. So let me go on and just start kind of covering a couple of the main terms I'll be talking about. And I like to just hit on these first because I'll be mentioning CART and captioning. And a lot of times they're used interchangeably. I like the word CART because it tends to be more descriptive of what's happening, of communication access real-time translation services. Now, some people don't like this term, and there's a lot of different terminology given to these type of terms. But CART is really a more descriptive term, I think, of how and what the provider is doing, versus captions are really a descriptive term of, how the real-time is presented to you in a text format, whether on the screen or being presented in a web page. So,
Nick, I'm sorry, I wonder if I could interrupt you for a second. Yeah. We are talking about captioning and real-time captioning. We are having a problem with our captioner, so if I could ask you just to hold on for 2 seconds while we get our captioner back in action, and then ask you to continue. So this is a very apropos session of exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So apologies to everybody. The captioner will be back shortly.
Well, and this is one of the downfalls, obviously, of internet. Your reliance on technology, which can be temperamental, I guess, from time to time. And we'll wait for her to come back online. I will hold off on going through through this slide.
Captioner, I believe that you should be back up and working. Would you please confirm that you are able to hear us correctly? Well, I think we are working towards getting our captioner going. We have her online, but yes, that looks like it's working from here. That's lovely. So thank you very much. And Nick, I think you are free to continue. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you. These terms, and I'll refer to this as captioning, as most people too, but I may also, I'll mention CART. And a CART provider, a CART service, typically will be, the goal is to provide a verbatim type service where you're getting word for word accurate translation. And you're also potentially getting CART, I call it a little plus. You'll getting background, what's happening in the background. You may hear some noise, applause, music, whether that's going on in the background. And so CART is really a descriptive way of really giving you more of a sense, I think, of what's happening, not only verbally, but potentially what else is going on in the room. So I find it a service that's a little bit different than just straight captioning, although they can be definitely referred to as the same term. There really isn't a fundamental terminology out there. And that's one of the things we'll hit on as we go through captioning, is that there are standards, but when it comes to internet captioning, there really aren't a lot of standards. So a lot of what I'll be talking about is really going to be referring to what solutions are out there and how people make these things work on different applications. And it's exciting because it really does free up where the service can be delivered and where you can get accessibility. So now that I've covered the basic terms of CART and captioning, I just want to do a high-level kind of 30,000-foot view of what's really happening technology-wise. And it's actually fairly straightforward. You're going to have your transcription CART provider, like our provider today, who's working on their transcription software, and I'll go through some of the different platforms again that are used for that. And they'll be hooked up via the internet to send their real-time captions to a server. In our case, it would be the ScreenText server. In this case, actually, Blackboard Collaborate has a window that the caption provider writes into. So they're actually a little more integrated into the meeting and have a little different interface for working with it. But it's the same concept. You're basically sending your real-times over the internet, and they're getting broadcast out to the other people on here. You're going to see you have a lot of different things you can go to. You can go to Adobe Connect, Google Hangouts, go to Webinar. I mean, you really have a lot of places these captions can be sent to. And what's exciting, too, is the captions can be sent to multiple places at the same time. So you really have a lot of freedom in how these captions can be delivered and what they can be delivered to. I just want to show that from a high level, just so you know, there's the part over here with the caption CART provider, they connect via the internet, and then that's getting rebroadcast out to the internet. There are some technologies too where they may be connecting directly to the device and those type of things, but typically for a caption experience, they are hooking up to a server of one sort or another. But I really like to talk first about the speech-to-text. And to me, this is really the hard part. I know the service side of being able to deliver the technology is a big part of what we're talking about here. But really talking about how the service is being done and what you're getting for that service, I think is a good starting point. I find this to be an area that people don't necessarily know all the details about and what the options are. And I'm not trying to pick a favorites or what the best solution is. But I like to cover what the options are and what is out on the marketplace today. And that really breaks down into three or four main areas, really stenography, voice recognition, and text interpreting. So first I'm going to start off with stenography. And stenography is really the gold standard. And the reason for that are a couple of things. The ability to really reach the high speeds necessary for doing speech to text. You know, you're talking 300 words a minute plus, where a good writer is going to be able to hit those levels. There's also a certification process through the National Court Reporters Association. That's a great way to verify that the person providing your service has been certified in the service and understands the nuances and how to deliver that service at the correct speed. So, you know, that's one thing that's really advantageous with a stenography provider. It also is hard. It takes a long time for a stenographer to get up to speed and write. So that's one of the detractions of it, is there aren't necessarily a lot of stenography providers out there, and they tend to be the most expensive service to buy. But again, they provide a very high quality service. They have the ability to hit certain speeds, but it's all based on their training and how hard they've worked on it. And with any service, I always recommend that you actually watch it. If you're making a decision on hiring a service provider or are in that process of trying to select one, there's nothing like actually setting up a session and watching the writer write. You can usually tell right off the bat whether or not you've got someone that's going to be able to deliver the quality of service that you need. Because I will say, with all these categories, there's a wide range of good service, you know, an excellent service, and just understanding what those are, you know, the best way to do that is actually to watch it. So again, stenography is probably one of the primary methods used for delivering these type of captioning services. It's not the only one. But I would say for our service, for example, it makes up a high, it probably makes up the majority of the sessions run with us. So we spend a lot of time working with stenographers and understanding the technology they work with. Second is voice. Voice writing is really re-speaking. And so what will happen is someone will be listening to the audio and then re-speaking that into a speech recognition platform like Dragon, naturally speaking, or it could be another speech recognition platform. It's a technique that's been used for quite a long time, and there actually are a loose-knit, you know, there is a loose-knit group of folks out there that provide this service nationwide. I mean, you'll see some caption on TV that can be voice writing. You'll also see some cart services and caption services delivered this way. It tends not to be the highest, it's not the highest price point, and the reasons for that is there are some disadvantages to it in that there's a speed issue. There's time that it takes for the computer to actually go through and do the voice recognition piece, and there's also some issues with how you tune your dictionary and how you train your dictionary. A lot of what stenographers do and a lot of what voice writers really need to do is really train their dictionary. They have to train it to understand their voice. So they can be put in a situation where they're on a topic that they may not have run through that scenario either in their dictionaries. And in voice writing, it's very difficult to recover from that. So one of the hardest things for voice writers to do is really change something on the fly, which is one of the downsides to it. But if they understand what the material is going to be spoken, they understand the basics of that, they generally can provide that service. And if they practice well and they work hard at it, they deliver a very high quality service too. Again, with a voice writer, you really do want to make sure that you're checking it. And again, watching the real time really is the best. There's really, at the end of the day, it really matters just about the quality and how good that looks. And how good how the accurate and those type of metrics that you look at. Again, another method that you would think would be more prominent, but it's really not. It takes a lot of work to do it. It's not just quite as easy as getting a copy of Dragon and just starting to re-speak into it. The last one, the last major group I want to cover is text interpreting. And this is a growing area, but it's not verbatim like voice and stenography tend to be. Text interpreting focuses more on meaning for meaning, which is really an interpreted way of condensing the text into smaller amounts so they can type and make sure that that can get sent out in real time. So they may do some summarization. They may do some other work to kind of get a general idea of what's going on and some background about it, but it won't be verbatim. But the goal is to get the exact same meaning out so you get the same experience. I have noticed that there are some very good text interpreting providers out there that can almost keep up with real time. But it also ranges, where you have a range of providers that obviously don't deliver that high quality service. And a lot of it's based on training and how hard you work on it. There are some standards in the industry. Typewell does do, has a process of testing and approving folks to use their platform. Cprint is another platform that's also used in this area. Again, there's a lot of great providers out there that use these tools and also use StreamText. The main thing I like to hit on is make sure that you get a good view of it. Text interpreting price-wise tends to be more competitive too. It's obviously more cost-effective in that it doesn't take quite as long to get, as it's not the 3 to 5 year cycle like a stenographer. And then finally, I just want to touch on the automatic captioning. And the reason I like to touch on this is a lot of people that we do work with and from over the last few years, I'm always amazed at how many of them think that there's a machine generating the captions. And some fancy computer algorithm and those type of things. And it's not that there aren't tools for generating automatic captions. The issues tend to be around, the quality and reliability of those. The quality can vary dramatically. Because it's not tuned to a specific language or a specific person, per se, you can run into some problems with translations coming out pretty wacky and different than what you originally were saying. And so I don't really recommend using automatic captioning just for the sake of, if it's the only thing you have, it may be a good tool to use, but it really provides an experience that probably isn't communicating anything really related to what's happening in the session. And a good way to look at this is there's some automated captions that come pretty close, but they still tend to never be above that 70 to 80% accuracy. Google does offer this on YouTube, so you can kind of get an idea if you ever look at some YouTube videos that don't have captions and you turn on the automatic captions, you can kind of get an idea for what I'm talking about on there. But that's not to say this isn't going to happen. At some point, we're going to have automated speech recognition, which will be an exciting point because it really should get the ease of converting that speech into text reliable and fast. But it's a promise right now, and it just really doesn't exist. So I do recommend if you are going to be using any kind of automatic captioning to really spend a lot of time with it and understand what its capabilities are. So now that I've covered kind of some background, and I hope I haven't put you all asleep with some of the background stuff on this stuff, we'll go into some actual examples of internet captioning and delivering that to an individual. And I'm going to cover kind of a group of things. I'm going to start with our browser-based, kind of standard, a standard cart service for an individual, and then go all the way through some different scenarios and examples that I've had in the past. So this is, and it's probably kind of hard to see, but this is a standard internet browser cart stream support. And you'll see, in this case, I have a demo event running, but we have our text area in here. It allows, and this is what the end user or the consumer is going to be watching. And they have the ability to resize their font, colors, really to get that to look the way they want. You can turn the scroll on and off, for example. You can go back and forth. And there's also a chat on the right-hand side that you can join in. So it allows the caption provider to chat back and forth with the person needing the accessibility and see if there's any issues with the microphone or something going on with the audio on the other side. One of the things I didn't talk about in that schematic was the audio. And we had a good example of that on this webinar. And the audio selection is quite important. Obviously, the audio needs to be clear. It needs to be good. And those are usually one of the hardest, at least the biggest obstacle, is actually hooking up and getting good, clean audio. And so the chat a lot of times is used to, hey, the professor, you know, may have put the provider can't hear anything, and it may just because the professor's put the mic in their pocket. That's actually a pretty common thing that can happen. But it may be something else in the going on in the room, understanding, having that communication channel is just a nice thing to have to ensure kind of like a backup to make sure everything is going to work okay. And if there are any communication issues, you can chat to your provider through there. So this is a real, and this, these type of players will work anywhere. They'll work on a, you know, a tablet, you know, an iPhone. Almost any device that has a web browser is going to be able to support this type of interface. And so it's a real flexible tool for delivering this type of services to a lot of different places. Again, this is your typical standard kind of one-on-one cart captioning support screen. So that's kind of the standard, and this was really the initial probably way that 99% of our real time was delivered, was directly to the end user. Even if we were on a webcast like today, you would have been provided a link. You could click on that link and open up this player in a separate window and watch it at the same time. Things have progressed a little bit over the last 5 to 6 years, and what has progressed are some of the integration points where you're starting to see some of these applications have native captioning built into them. And having the ability to really integrate captions into them. And that's something that's really happened in the last 5 years, I would say more heavily in the last 2 to 3 years, where we've seen more of this happen. And that's, well, I'm going to bring you to kind of our second example here. I've got a couple of screenshots I've got here, and the one on the left-hand side is an implementation we did with Google. They do an event called Google I/O, which is their big get-together for all their developers all over the world. They engaged us to help them develop closed caption support that would be integrated with this player. And it was a good pattern, and Google really wanted to, you know, they really wanted to provide this service and make sure it was done right. And so they actually built out their own custom player below that integrates with a real-time feed. They allow you to even to change fonts and font sizes. They give you 3 font size selection. And you can also change the languages on it. So they really did an innovative piece where they added the language selection. Of course, the language piece is using translation from machine translation, but it did give you the option of getting the real-time in multiple languages. On this example to the right, they actually embedded the caption player right into the video and left it with open captions for the event. And it's just another way to flex, you know, to apply and integrate captioning into an experience that wasn't enabled for video or for captions And that's one of the things that's exciting too. A lot of the players out there and a lot of the video players and applications out there just really don't support real-time captioning. And one of the benefits has been recently is the ability to plug in a caption player into the experience where you can plug it in underneath or you can plug it in on top using some very easy-to-use, simple web language. I mean, it's really just a simple plug-in that goes into your web page. And so that has also allowed a lot of different platforms that couldn't offer accessibility before to be able to offer that now. And this is a pretty common use for our service as well, where you want to make something accessible that isn't, there's always a way to do it. You can plug in that caption player below that player, you can provide it to the right, you can provide a link. Or you can also provide a work like Google where you have a native application already built into it. So it's really exciting to see this. But there's more examples. I mean, these are just some of the kind of the basic examples, but we kind of took it to the next step with Google. And they were developing Google Hangouts. And at the time, I was involved with helping them pull in and create really this cart session within a Google Hangout. And this was exciting too. This was about 2 years ago that we plugged it in. And Google built a native application. So this is not a window that's plugged in. It's not our window that's been plugged in or anything. They're natively pulling the real time from our servers. They allow you to see more than one line at a time. And so you have a little better experience where you don't have to read one or two lines quickly and they flash off the screen. And so this product actually has been a nice fit. It has definitely evolved over the last couple of years. I do have to commend Google on being focused, and this was something that they designed really from the beginning before they released Hangout Captions. And that's probably a trend we're going to see more of, where you see a universal design concept, where you see people looking more at building applications that have accessibility already built into them. Now, is it perfect? No. And you know, a lot of the issues that we run into with accessibility and how people are implementing these is there are no real standards based on how many lines of text need to appear, what are best practices around, being able to increase fonts and do that type of stuff. But we're getting there. In some areas, there definitely are some standards coming out, and I do see, as we go forward, a lot of the newly developed applications definitely taking these things into account. So very exciting to have that piece work and another hookup that you can send real-time captions into. Adobe is another company that we have worked with for quite a while, and I like to use this as an example of another caption solution. You can see there's a pod right below here that's really just dedicated for real-time captions. And this even extends it even further than just showing you the text. But it also, this product actually allows you to annotate, take notes, and actually leverage that real-time real-time transcript and using it more than just for providing the accessibility piece. And so it's kind of exciting to have more uses, having the ability to highlight certain areas and engage it, because this is open captions. This is open for everybody. And what's really exciting about these type of implementations are when people all join the session, they've never seen real-time captions or real-time cart service before. And they come into it and they're just amazed by how much they were really missing in the first place, and how much more effective it is to have that real-time component as part of their webcast. We get that quite a bit, and one of the trends we're seeing with some of the universities and schools that we're working with is that they may make a webcast accessible via a webinar at some point for one class. And what we'll see is over time, everybody requesting the real-time piece. There were about 600 or 700 students on one of these online sessions, and they've been pushing hard to get it opened up for all the sessions, which really, you know, we try to talk to them. They're like, look, this will benefit a lot more than the people you think you're helping. And so some of the exciting I'm seeing along these lines are more of a direction towards open captioning, where everybody gets to participate in the real time, and also where you're seeing people looking at incorporating this really universally and not just for the accessibility piece. So a lot of exciting things. I guess I like to refer to this kind of thing as a kind of deluxe caption experience. We really try to get the most value out of that real time. Now, mobile devices, I think, are really a big deal. About, you know, this was all, you know, maybe 5 years ago when smartphones really started coming online. It really opened up a lot of areas that you couldn't have received real-time captions before. Most of the time in the past, maybe 5 or 6 years previous before that, you were really limited to getting them to a laptop or someone with a very good, you know, a good network connection. Now that mobile devices have good network connections, it's very exciting because you can send this to a lot of different things. Google Glass is the one we've just been, over the last year, we've had new people getting on and using, which has been exciting because people can, you know, you can walk around, you've got your captions going, and you can really have some good interactive experiences with that. Smartphones, years ago, I had a great experience with a BlackBerry. We had created a bridge into BlackBerry so you could natively stream into the BlackBerry platform. And it was for a wedding. And the groom had his BlackBerry, and he was able to really navigate through the crowd, participate, and greet people, and just enjoy his wedding just like everybody else. And it was, he was really, the exciting part for him was he felt like it was just a wonderful experience because he was able to really interact with a lot of people that he normally wouldn't be able to interact with. And it was just one of those experiences where he was able to get the accessibility he needed and the service he needed in an environment that he just didn't really think that was possible. And we've seen a lot of things like that with the mobile devices where you see events that are outside. You know, if you've got a tablet or a smartphone, you can use it. We're also seeing things like in sporting events and stadiums where you have smartphone-enabled closed captions. And so you're anywhere in the facility, you're able to watch those real-time captions on your smartphone. Museums are another experience that I've gotten some good feedback on is having the docent who's wearing a mic. And the caption provider is able to caption the entire tour and those types of things. It's exciting to see that because it really breaks a lot of the limitations I think that were there before. And then performances. You'll see things where you have smart devices or certain things used for captioning for the performances. I'm just most excited. It just seems to me that the mobile devices have really opened up the world to a lot of different experiences, and devices like Google Glass and a lot of these are really, I think, make receiving captions and getting accessibility allow you to really focus on the meeting or whatever the task at hand, and there's really nothing special about you receiving those real-time captions. So I'm really excited about that, and especially the areas that opens up. I've seen the most growth in these type of services, and even a lot of the students and users, instead of using PCs, are using tablets or smartphones in the classroom setting. So very exciting to see that. So in summary, and I know I wanted to open this up for questions too, but I was just going to kind of summarize what I've covered here, and we can go into some question and answer, because I know there's a lot of questions about how things are done and terminology and different platforms and those type of things. So I think the key thing I do want to hit on is understanding the type of service you're receiving first. You know, is it sonography, text interpreting, voice. Know what that service is. Know what its limitations are. And get a demo and see it in action. I think that's really a critical piece a lot of people don't realize they can ask for. And it really will help make sure that you're providing the service that's going to be of the quality that you're going to need for that situation. Captions can be delivered almost anywhere. So if you've got internet access and you need to provide accessibility somewhere, you're probably going to be able to figure it out. We've had a lot of amazing stories of people setting up things. The Olympic trials, there were some great stories about how they set up a screen, and it was pouring rain and they had it all out in the field working off the Wi-Fi location there. And just really interesting experiences where you can really open up where captions can be delivered. So if you've got an internet connection, and audio can get back out through that internet connection, you can probably receive captions where you're at. And the availability has been increasing. I mean, this is one thing that I have seen over time is people are starting to incorporate this thought more into their design and process when they're building out some of these video platforms and different internet-based applications. Although I wouldn't say it's something that everyone's doing a very good job of. A lot of cases you'll see, kind of the lowest common denominator. I'll do the quickest, easiest job I can do to get accessibility. And I'm not saying we don't see that. That definitely is an issue where you have people that say, hey, there's words up there. That's good enough. And that typically last maybe the first time they do an event or the second time they do an event, and they realize that there's a lot of value in the real-time captions, and they will lose customers if they don't provide that type of service and provide a good service as well. So it's pretty exciting. I've been very excited about where things are going in the industry. I spend a lot of my time talking with the platform providers and these guys trying to figure out how we can get our real time into their platforms. How can we make these accessible? What are things we can do to make their next webinar look good and make that work? There's a lot that goes into that, and the problem now is there aren't a lot of standards. I mean, there's talk of standards, and there definitely are a few communication standards set out there. But when it comes really to the implementation of these, there really is very little going around the standards. And for the most part, you're going to see some interesting implementations, like Google Hangouts has kind of their own flavor of implementation versus something like Adobe Connect, where you see some differences in here. So it's pretty interesting, and it's been a lot of fun actually to watch this evolve. And I think, again, by allowing the providers to all be remote and allowing the consumer really to be located anywhere in the world, as long as you have an internet connection, you can provide service there. And some of the firms that we work with have really done, I think, a good job of promoting that. And so it was pretty interesting. But anyhow, I'll start opening this up for questions, so I can start maybe walking through some of the questions you might have. We've got plenty of time, so I can definitely talk some more about that and hit on some topics that you may have some more interest in.
Thanks, Nick. That's great. I have a couple of questions just on my side while we're waiting for people to put in some questions of their own. In terms of recording captioning for archiving of sessions. I'm thinking, you know, particularly with this one, we have our own way of being able to save this particular recording. But what is your experience about being able to save those real-time captionings and so on through these different platforms that you were talking about, like Google Hangout or Adobe Connect? Is it a tricky process to do that, and how accessible is that to, you know, someone like me who might just be wanting to connect to Google Hangout and take advantage of that?
Okay. Yeah, great. Well, so post-production is what I'm going to refer to this as. This is after the event, so the on-demand replay of captions. And I'll walk you through kind of what we do, and then the different platforms, unfortunately, all have kind of different nuances, like how they provide that support. So in StreamText, in our platform, when the real time is coming through our platform, we time code all of the real time text. And those time codes are, you're able to export those at the end of the event into different formats. And so these different platforms all have different ingestion formats. YouTube, for example, has an SRT format. That's the name of their file format. And it's a specific file structure where you have the time codes laid out in a certain XML structure, and you have a certain way that those are represented. Different players have different formats. So Windows, for example, supports what's called the FAMI format, which is another time-coded format. There's also a web VTT format, which is really an international standards W3C standard format that is also implemented on some players. And there's a few other ones. There's a real text editor file, and there's even a format called .scc, which is the old format for DVDs and those type of things. It's a pretty old standard format. So I guess that's a complicated answer, in that you have to know really what the platform is you're going to be providing those captions for on demand. So typically what we'll do is find out, hey, what platform are you on, and then what file do they support? And our platform, for example, can export to these different formats typically. But a lot of times they have a custom format that has to be customized for that. So that's typically how we'll ask for it. Now, some platforms do record the sessions without the time-coded piece, and that would be stuff like Adobe Connect. Where I was showing you that pod. That pod actually records into the meeting itself. And so you don't have to do any post-production work there at all. You just have to hit record when you start the session, and it records the transcripts. And that's similar to how Blackboard works as well. I believe you have the ability to record the session as it comes directly in the platform. Google Hangouts is a little different in that it won't record the session, but you can record it if you have it at the same time going into YouTube Live. So they've created an integration with YouTube Live that allows you to send those into YouTube Live. So you can record your Hangout, and you can also record the captions with it. So that's a nice, pretty seamless piece, as long as you have that YouTube Live component turned on. When you run the Hangout session. It definitely is one of the more challenging pieces, is getting the post-production right because of the variability in the different platforms and what they support. There's some tools also used for this. Because it's not enough just to provide the time codes, but typically you also have to do some editing of the file as well. So, and that usually revolves around trying to set time zero. And that is setting the right time when the text appears to coordinate with the video. And so there's some tweaking and tuning that's done to make sure that that's hooked up correctly. And so there is more work involved with post-production than you think. And one of the other areas too that can come up as well is if you edit the video And those type of things, that also changes how you have to sync the text. There are automatic tools out there. There's a platform called Automatic Sync, for example, where they advertise the ability to upload a transcript and they in the audio, and they'll generate these time-coded files for you for some of these specific files. It tends to be pretty expensive to do that. And in some cases, the automated pieces just don't work. You have to use manual tuning to kind of to align some of those pieces, because there's a lot of variables that can come into play. I hope I didn't get too detailed on there. It's kind of a question mark answer. And a lot of it really depends on the platform and what you're working with. I wish there were some more. And this is something I think the standards, the WebBTT standard that we see out there, is probably going to become the standard that most people start using in the future as they build out new platforms and update theirs. I mean, I'm hoping that they go to a standard format, so you don't have to kind of come up with all these different solutions.
Lovely. Thank you. That was a good answer. A couple of the questions that are coming in from our audience. First one is, would a transcriptionist be considered a stenographer? So that's question number one. And then question number two is, in higher education, do instructor lectures have copyright considerations related to students sharing captioned lectures? So a couple of diverse questions there.
Oh, those are very diverse questions. Well, the first one is a good one. It could be. A transcriptionist could be a stenographer. Because a stenographer, I'm referring to someone using the stenography tools. And I had that picture of the keyboard that they use. I'm referring really to a specific tool and technology, and that can be used definitely for transcription. There's a lot of stenographers that just do transcription and don't necessarily do the real-time transcription. Real-time is an art. I mean, the caption provider you have today, it's quite a bit of skill to get to that level, to be able to echo and really write real-time speed. A lot of transcriptionists are stenographers. I'd say there's a much smaller group of stenographers that provide the real-time kind of captioning and CART services. So I hope that clears it up. There actually is, it's just really, stenography is really a tool used to create the transcript. On the second question about, what was the second? I want to make sure I got the whole, that was on the copyright. That's a good question. And, you know, and I don't know if I have the direct answer on this in a way, because we're really a technology platform used by, you know, a lot of caption CART providers out there in the U.S. We're probably, you know, so we're really the transmission platform on that side, and we don't interact a lot with the, you know, end user copyright issues. But I do know, I can just go from experience, there are definitely situations where, you know, the service is only provided to that student. There are no open captions. I mean, there definitely are universities that don't want to use open captions and want to just offer it only for the person for accessibility and those type of things. And it varies from university to corporation. You know, I don't, on the copyright issues, I'm assuming that, you know, there definitely is an area in there where this does, you know, it may only be allowed to be viewed by the student unless there's a, you know, that the professor or someone has allowed everyone to, you know, if you're using open captions to be able to participate in that. But that's an interesting topic. I don't know if I know, I definitely don't know all the answers of it. I know from our side, we have a lot of security features built in so that you can make sure it's a certain person logging in if you need to, and you can make sure you can prevent unauthorized access of that real time.
Great, thank you. The next two questions, the first one, fairly short but an important one, is there a VPAT for the StreamTech.net applications and services? And for those who are not familiar with VPAT, that is the Voluntary Product Accessibility Template, which is related back to the Section 508 standards for accessibility on the web. So that was question number one. And then the second question is regarding mobile devices. Are there apps for mobile devices? Do you need to get an app to get the service? Is there a cost per minute? How do the logistics work for mobile devices?
Okay. Well, I'm going to hit the VPAT one. We'll kind of go through. So VPAT, I'm not as familiar with VPAT, and maybe I should be. But I haven't. We have been evaluated quite a bit for accessibility, though, and 508 compliance. The government organizations, disability.org, we worked with some with their development team, and they actually did a pretty good review of our player. And you know, we've tried to manage and make sure that's you know, meets all the latest accessibility standards. We also have programmed our player to be compliant with JAWS and the screen readers. So it's correctly coded so that you can read the real-time text and actually utilize it in Braille readers and those types of devices as well for deafblind accessibility. Although, I will say, most of the screen readers have a tough time dealing with real-time text. There are some tricks that you have to use inside of those players to keep that cursor kind of right at the where the new text is coming out. A lot of times they tend to jump up to the beginning again once they get to the end. So I don't know if I have enough information on VPAT to really give a firm answer on that, but I know on 508 compliance we try to make sure we keep it as up-to-date as possible. And a lot of our basic, I didn't show our player that long, but a lot of the controls are very simple, we try to keep it just easy to use, and we do not make a lot of changes to that player over time, so we don't throw off our existing users. The second, are there apps for mobile devices? So, no. Well, we don't have a specific app for mobile devices because it works in the web player and it works in your browser on these mobile devices. So we haven't ourselves created apps, but our customers have. We have had cases where a good example would be University of Wisconsin. And the athletic program has a closed captioning app built in, and they have in that app, they've plugged in our player. So our player is capable of being plugged into different apps, and many times it is. Some of the stadium accessibility pieces in those areas actually embed our player right in the app. We haven't created one. It's something we've looked at, but we feel like our web-based player is kind of our universal tool. So we try to use that in almost every scenario that'll work. And we can rely on that working, and you don't have to download or buy anything to watch it. So it's very simple, really just a web-based product that works anywhere. And it's firewall-friendly. It's designed to really work in most environments. Since we're used a lot in government education, we've definitely done a lot of work to make sure that'll work in a lot of different areas. So that's a good question. We may have an app at some point, but we've tried to stick to the web browser just to try and keep it simple.
Lovely, thank you. Okay, so the next question is, what kind of mic works best for remote captioning? And then secondly, what is the minimum equipment needed for a person to receive captions in a meeting? One cell phone, conference mic, mic and cell phone. What sort of equipment is needed for that conference? And I do notice, just by the way, that our captioners, we do seem to be having problems with our captioner today, and I apologize for that. So for those of you who are relying on captions, I do apologize. We will see if we can get that back up and going. But in the meantime, Nick, back to you to answer those two questions.
Well, we should have set them up on a screen text feed, but anyhow, that's a bummer. I'm sorry about the captioning not working. And I think that's a big part of the presentation, and I understand what kind of impact that makes. So these are very good questions on the mic and the sound, and I had wanted to talk about this in a little more detail. So the mic is a big part of this whole thing, and there's two basic types of mics. You're going to have kind of an omnidirectional mic that can sit in the middle of the room, kind of like a speakerphone mic that can pick up everything in the room. And there's another, and then you can have a lapel type mic that's just going to mic the individual. And you're going to get the individuals, like the professor, for example, or primary speaker. And we work, and we don't have any agreement or any kind of, but Revo Labs tends to be RevoLabs.com, tends to have the best quality mics. And there are other mics out there that are very good. They tend to be expensive. They tend to run to $300 to $600 for these units. And the reason these units are so great is they last, the charge usually lasts quite a long time on them. So the way these usually work is they're a Bluetooth communication from the mic to a laptop that's probably running Skype, usually to send the audio. There are other platforms people send the audio on. They may have a phone line support. They may be using something like Google to use the audio. But that audio will be definitely reading off of that microphone. Lapel mics tend to be the primary mic that's used most often in a classroom setting, just because it's going to get the best quality audio from that professor. And you're not going to have interruptions from, you know, someone clicking their pencil or doing something like that in the room that may cause an omnidirectional mic that's picking up everything to cause some issues. However, the omnidirectional mic has some advantages in that if it's a good audio connection, the provider has the ability to hear people asking questions and being able to cart and write those questions and answers type scenarios. So there definitely is a dividing, you know, there's definitely some evaluation to be done whether or not you want to use an omnidirectional versus a lapel mic on there. Now, I talked a little bit about how the audio gets in, and Skype is really the primary tool that people use to send that audio back to the caption provider. Now, in this case, the meeting room itself is the audio. So the audio is coming through here, and they're dialing, and obviously there's some issues hooking up to the audio here. Skype is used probably 90% of the time on our CART sessions with students and folks, and it tends to be the most reliable, and that's why it's primarily used. They've spent a lot of money on this, and over the last 5 years, it has really become one of the more reliable platforms to use for that. So that is probably why Skype is one of the primary used tools. But Google Voice and those type of things are also options. Really, even conference calls and using a speakerphone is also an option. But one of the things you do need to do with the audio, since the audio is so critical, as you know, as you can see here, if you're not getting audio, you can't write. And so making sure that audio is clear, as good as you can get it, is definitely worth it. And that's why going with the higher quality microphones is going to be a better bet. Just the longer battery life and the clarity and also the lifespan. These tend to run a long time. There's a university locally here, Emory University, they've had the same microphones for years. And they do, they're very reliable. And the firm that provides that, Revo Labs, tends to be pretty good about having a good warranty on those. But again, there any high quality mic should do? And that's a good question, because that is really, all of these internet based caption deliveries formats are highly dependent on the quality of that audio.
Thank you. And just a comment on that in terms of the quality of the audio is, as much as the mic is important, the speed and the quality of your internet connection is going to be equally as important. If you do have a very slow internet connection, I'm guessing that that would interfere with your audio quite substantially, causing just another complication when you're trying to really translate that audio into text. Would you say that that is a factor?
Yeah, it definitely is. But the caption provider, typically your caption provider, if they're doing remote services, they're set up for that. I mean, they're going to have a good bandwidth where they're at for the audio. And the provider and the student or whoever's in the, wherever the audio is coming from, that's, you know, making sure that they've got a good connection and that they're hooked up correctly is good. It's important. You're right. That's got to be good. But I do find that, and about a lot of people that provide the CART, the remote type services, their setup is usually going to be pretty good for that. So I think the main thing is Wi-Fi. And I guess I like to talk, if you're receiving services through Wi-Fi, you have to understand that Wi-Fi can be intermittent. It can pop in and out. Even on a strong connection, you can have some intermittent hiccups in the feed. And you don't notice this on whether if you're watching a video or something else on a Wi-Fi, because almost everything is buffered. So if there's a hiccup in the feed, you won't see it because you have a 1 or 2 second buffering. So you don't necessarily see those hiccups. But in real-time captions, you will see hiccups, because if it's coming through in real time, any kind of hiccup will show up. So the Wi-Fi and your quality of connection, it's not so much the bandwidth, because the audio and the, as long as you're not sending video, the audio and the text, really it's more of a consistent connection and having a connection that doesn't come in and out. So that's the biggest problem I see if there, you know, if an issue does come up, is if someone's on a Wi-Fi somewhere, you know, they might be down in the lower basement area of a building or something like that. And it looks okay, they're connected, they're able to browse web pages, but they notice their captions coming across a little chunky or something like that. You'll definitely see that based on the on that as well. The audio with Skype and these things, they're designed to work on low bandwidth networks like that. The thing you start to see on there sometimes is a delay. You'll see a little buffering and delay that may come into it. But once you get to a point, usually those things won't work at all. They either seem to work, you know, the audio either seems to work or not at all. So it's kind of an and or. But good question. The audio is really critical. And your internet connection is critical. And one of the things to understand with these platforms is, you know, as you see today, you're really dependent on that internet connection. And you know, we try to offer alternatives sometimes for you know, having the real-time delivery through different things. You can do some stuff like that where you have, you know, your session going into the meeting room, but you also have a backup link. You can do some stuff like that, but it's tough when you can't get the audio.
Great, lovely, thank you. The next two, the first one, I think we might need a little bit more clarification from the person who posted this. The question is, how are these formats activated? So we might need a little bit more clarification from that person if you'd like to repeat the question there. The second one is, does CART replace the need for an ASL interpreter?
Oh, well, I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that. I think it depends on, you know, the consumer and what they want. They're definitely, I've seen both where you have ASL and CART provided. in certain circumstances. And I think cart can provide, you know, I think there are certain consumers, I think, that prefer different types of services. I'm probably not the person to answer that directly, because I don't have as much contact, in that community to know, why you'd prefer one over the other. But I have worked with a late deaf person who lost his hearing late in life, and he didn't know ASL. And so for him, CART was his lifeline. And so I know if you don't know ASL, CART really becomes your only option of it. And so CART will open it up to more people, I think. But I also know that ASL does a wonderful job, and a lot of people really, really enjoy that service as well.
On that same level then, obviously, listening to what you're saying, this requires an interaction between the person who's providing the presentation, the service like Google Hangouts and so on, and a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure that there's a captioner available, to make sure that CART is available and so on. How do you see this happening or going forward into the future, that this will be more accessible for people on a real ad hoc basis, that there doesn't have to be quite so much planning in advance and booking interpreters, booking captioners, whatever it might be, but that this might actually be built in, that you could join a Google Hangout on a whim and have that available to you if you're wanting to use the CART services? It just seems like at the moment it's really quite a cumbersome process to make it happen, but is it going to be more available on a day-to-day mainstream basis?
That's a good question. It is cumbersome. I agree with that. It takes, if you need service, if you need accessibility in an hour, you're going to be hard-pressed to get that to happen. And so there's a couple of issues. One is the provider base, the people that actually provide that do the CART, speech to text. I can group stenographers, everybody kind of into a bucket. There aren't a lot of them. I mean, you might think there's a lot of firms out there that provide it, but we're not talking tens and tens of thousands of people. We're not talking even many thousands of people. And one of the nice things about being able to do this remote service piece is you can have groups of people who are dedicated to be reactionary, and that they can be available on notice anytime to do that. And there are some firms and services that are geared towards that. But again, they're few and far between. Some of these tend to be more related to the call, call relay type services and those type of things, where they're doing potentially some CART type writing to capture the speech to text. We get proposed this a lot because we work with so many providers. Would it be possible to have, a way to interface in stream text where I could interface and, could make a request and get an instant, response back? That would be possible if we were a captioning firm. One of the problems is we're not. So we can't get in the relationship of that. And I think that problem comes in with a hangout, too. Like, let's say you get into a hangout and you want to pick a caption provider and get one going right now. I mean, the way to really have that working is to have a group of people that are always on call, that you can call, and that are part of that service. But someone has to cover, the time when they're not riding and be able to pay for that. So I know that there's some issues around that, but I think the big problem is just the resources, the amount of people that provide this, and then the cost associated with it. I see automatic speech recognition as being the final piece here that would get rid of that problem. I mean, I think the only way to really address that and really make it easy is to have an automated process where the machine is actually doing the speech to text, because in that case you don't need to schedule with a person and get that time, you know, have that person available and ready to go. I think in an ideal world, you know, it'd be great to have all the car providers and be able to create that kind of system. And that's that is something that people have approached me about and have talked to us about, that we're just not a caption firm. So I think there's a lot of benefits of working with a caption firm, because there's a lot more details that go into it than just, you know, setting up the session. You know, there's a lot more logistics on the back end that usually go into it, as far as scheduling and managing it, getting payment for that service. So there's a lot more that goes into it than just providing the service. And I think that's probably the future. When you do get more of these automated systems that are in place, or you have companies like Google that say, this is something we're going to incorporate into our platform. We're going to offer the service piece as well. We're going to make sure that service piece goes hand in hand with the ability to do it. And, you know, that's another, you know, that I think it takes a step by them, because they really become responsible for it. Someone has to take some responsibility for making sure that that person is qualified, that they're somewhat vetted, and that they're able to provide that service, because you're no better off, with poor service, you know, in some ways than you are with not having service. So I wish I had a better answer on that, but I think a couple of things are, I think the platform providers like Google Hangouts and those guys need to, you know, look at that as something integral to offering this. And that would probably help a lot, because then you'd have the ability to have these writers on call and able to provide that service. Good question. I wish it was that way now. But I do see moves in that way, and I think technology, and potentially if you see platforms, Google's, Adobe's, and these guys seeing this as an integral part of it, they may start offering that.
Great. Looks like a good business opportunity for somebody out there. One more question that we have. Are there rules for editing transcripts? Do you need to keep it verbatim, or can you edit to what is implied in the discussion? I think that's an excellent one, because we all know that the way that one talks and the way that one reads, there's an awful lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily translate or doesn't need to be included in the translation itself.
Yeah. That's a good question. Are there any rules? There are no rules, in a way. I mean, I think the goal is to get verbatim. I mean, in most of the firms that work with us, you know, they want to send out products that are verbatim, if possible. Now, summarization. Now, if you edit the video, or if there's certain things that you can summarize, having that information displayed as captions, I don't think there's any rules against doing that. If you had an interpreter that's interpreting, you know, it's not verbatim. So, I mean, there definitely is some area in there, I think, to work with. But I do know most of the providers that work with us, their goal is really getting that 100% accurate, if possible. As close as possible to the accuracy of the verbatim, just so that you're not making any you're not doing the interpreting for somebody else. You know, I think that's the goal is that the end consumer is allowed to interpret the text and see what was actually being spoken live, and not have something in between that. I guess that's probably a good summary of it. But again, there aren't any real rules, I think. I've seen stuff all over the map on it. I mean, I've had cases where people literally are happy that words are showing up that have nothing to do with necessarily what's being shown on the screen. A majority of the firms that use us, I definitely know they they want to make that as close to possible to being accurate.
Lovely, thank you. Well, it looks like we have finally lost our captioner again, one last time, but we are just about coming to the end of our session. So I have one last question for you, and then I think we will need to wrap it up. Using your service, or in fact any one of these services, how does one arrange to have captions for a live meeting, for example?
Okay. You contact a caption provider. So the way you arrange like a screen text session or any of these type of sessions, internet-based sessions, is you find a caption provider. And there's firms all over the country that use stream. Most firms use stream text and these type of internet platforms to deliver their services. That's why I hit so much on the providers initially. All of them are able to work with stream text. So the key is for you to find a firm or company or provider, and it could be local. You can Google for the providers on the internet. There's quite a few. There's also NCRA, the National Court Reporters, has a lookup on their website for stenographers. So there are a number of ways of finding firms, because typically you're not going to hire an individual captioner. You're probably going to hire a captioning firm, because you're going to want someone to, let's say someone cancels, you need someone to fill in. Firms will have the ability to switch someone in, make sure you get someone that can replace a job and just handle kind of some of the logistics around that. And so I recommend just finding a good service provider and letting them know how you want the service delivered. I mean, a lot of people will come in to a service where I say, hey, I want this on stream text. This is how I had it done before. Or I had my captions delivered this way, can you do that? So it really all starts with that service provider. And they're a great resource. And if you find a good CART captioning firm, they're really going to be a good partner for you in providing that. Because you're looking for, there's reliability. There's just a lot of things that go into making sure that service is going to work when you need it.
Lovely. Okay, well, thank you very much, Nick. I think at this stage we are just about at the end of the session, and very apropos this session, we usually don't have quite so many problems with our captioning. It usually works wonderfully, and I do want to give a shout out to our captioning partners who really do a good job for us on our webinars. So thank you to you folk as well. At this stage, we will be sending out a link a little bit later for you to do some evaluations for those of you who are participating as audience members. So please do fill out the evaluations. Let us know what you thought of the session today and the topic. And always we are keen to hear about other topics that you'd like to hear about going forward. Our next session will be on January the 15th, and we are planning to have a panel talking about creating an organizational accessibility plan. So that's the idea. We are currently working on our schedule for the next year, and that will be posted up on the Accessible Tech website and also on the ada-audio.org website with the sessions that are coming forward. So we look forward to continuing the session series into 2015, and we really appreciate your time. And Nick, once again, thank you very much for your time. It's been a delight and a really interesting topic altogether.
Thank you all very much. I enjoyed it. And if you have any follow-up questions, please
conference
let me know.
Conference recording.
Thank you. And just one last question that maybe you can answer for us, Nick, is would you just give us an email or a telephone number that people can contact you if they do need to do that?
Oh, yeah. It's nick.wilkie, W-I-L-K-I-E, at screentext.net. I'll put it in the chat, too, for everybody. But it was great talking about this. I could probably talk for a lot longer on it, but it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you all.
Once again, thank you so much, and this concludes our session for today.